Jim Ross said it best. At the end of this episode, the man has a way with words. That's why he's the greatest of all time. But Jim Ross said that the Undertaker is the aging gunfighter. Said the sand is pouring through the hourglass at a rapid rate. Said it's called Father Time. And Father Time don't do no jobs. Father Time is undefeated. Father Time does not lose any matches. And in this series, this is the reality that Mark Calloway faces. This is his reality. This is the reality that every wrestler faces. When they get to a certain point in their career, maybe they're in their 40s, maybe they're in their 50s, maybe they're in their 60s. Some guys can never let go. Some guys can never find that one last great match that they can just take a deep breath and go, that's the perfect storybook ending to my career. And that's the position that The Undertaker finds himself in here. Shawn Michaels says it during the special. It's like chasing the dragon. And that's never a good thing. This is your Undertaker The Last Ride recap for Chapter 3, End of an Era, which placed more of the focus on this episode on the four-year story arc for those WrestleMania matches, 25, 26, 27, 28, with Shawn Michaels and Triple H. That really was the core focus of this episode. Going from the WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels, the first one, all the way through to the End of an Era match with Triple H, Hell in a Cell, in Miami, at WrestleMania 28. All great matches. All four matches were great matches. The first one, of course, Undertaker and Shawn. In my opinion, being the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. But all fine matches in the series. And then it pivots to the matches at Super Showdown and Crown Jewel in 2018 that were anything but great. Great is not a word I would use for it. You might have had the greatest Royal Rumble. You can call it anything you want to great. You can call me great. You can call, you know, any match great. Doesn't mean it is. These matches were at the other end of the spectrum. And it made me wish that Hell in a Cell match back in 2012 really was the end of an era. Made me wish that they really did live up to that tagline. And that everybody involved, including The Undertaker, knew at that point when to call it quits. That's what it makes me wish. They cover him being invited to come to Saudi Arabia for that first Sweet Saudi Money show back in 2018. The greatest Royal Rumble. I guess it's kind of like Edge and Randy Orton coming up at Backlash. The greatest wrestling match of all time. To who? I don't know. They're not even calling it, well, maybe the greatest. No, it is the greatest wrestling match of all time. Well, that's some high praise for a match that hasn't taken place yet. My question is, how could it be great if it's not taking place in Saudi Arabia? Can't be great unless you have it over there. How great could it be? So they showed footage from the dinner. I don't know how many of you remember this. There was, on the first Saudi trip, they had this big dinner. This big, formal, elaborate feast. They had music playing. People performing for them. They had Randy Orton was there. Mark Henry, Rusev. You had The Undertaker sitting there. And Vince McMahon was at the head of the table. He was having a conversation with one of the Saudi princes. There's Brock Lesnar, there's The Undertaker, there's Kurt Angle, who was playing around on his phone half the time. I remember Great Khali was there, he was sitting in the middle, he had nobody to talk to, I felt so bad for this guy. Everybody's eating, talking, schmoozing, there's Great Khali, he just looks like he's happy to be there. So I remember that. And he took us through kind of his mindset as far as why he was intrigued at the idea of going to Saudi Arabia the first time. You know, I'm given my character and the caskets and death. I don't know how these people are going to react to it. Of course, they reacted fine. They have WWE fans over there just like anywhere else. What do you think? He was going to fly over there and get chased out of the country? They probably wanted him there. They probably requested that The Undertaker be part of that show. So then he takes us through what may end up being his final match at Madison Square Garden, all the way back to July of 2018. It's a big six-man tag. It was Undertaker, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman taking on Elias, Baron Corbin, and Kevin Owens. And, you know, the Garden has been a special building to The Undertaker over the years. He's wrestled a lot of matches there. He's had a lot of moments in that building. His big comeback at WrestleMania 20, you know, coming down like Batman at Survivor Series in 96 back, you know, when he was wrestling Mankind. A lot of moments over the years. Talked about that, talked about what the Garden meant to him. It was not his last Madison Square Garden appearance, as we would come to find out. You know, they ran a double shot at MSG last September, and they advertised The Undertaker to come back to SmackDown, and so back he came. Didn't wrestle a match, he did cut a promo, had a little interaction with Sami Zayn, dropped Sami Zayn with a chokeslam. I always thought it would have been more interesting to have some kind of political debate in the middle of the ring with Undertaker and Sami Zayn. That's something I would pay to go to the Garden and see. Imagine that, an Undertaker-Sami Zayn political debate at Madison Square Garden. Because you know their politics line up so closely. They're so closely aligned politically. I would like to see that one day. Maybe one day we can make that happen. Undertaker and Sami Zayn get the podiums in the ring. Talking politics in the ring. 20,000 people, Madison Square Garden. But he talks about the Garden show in 2018. He enjoyed the match. But it just wasn't... It wasn't the match he felt he wanted to end his career on. Of course it wouldn't be. I mean, it was a house show match at Madison Square Garden. I think anybody could have figured that out. But he wasn't really feeling like, eh, this doesn't feel like the end. And that, you know, really that is the theme of the series so far. We're only three episodes in. We got two more left. But the theme of the series so far is a guy who just is waiting to get that closure. He's waiting to feel like, okay, this is it. And then finally pack it up and call it quits, and he can't figure it out. You know, his wife said it on the last episode. He has a good match. Hey, I'm feeling pretty good. I'll come back and do it again. He has a bad match. Well, I've got to come back and I've got to redeem myself. And it's this vicious, never-ending cycle. Undertaker gets a call from Vince McMahon. September 2018, his phone rings, it's Vince McMahon. How would you feel about working a match at Super Showdown? Down in Australia, we'll do a match with you and Triple H, which they were billing as the final ever match. Would have to be singles match, otherwise they're liars. Final ever match involving Undertaker one-on-one against Triple H. This is it. This is going to be the final battle. Undertaker said, sure. Sounds good to me. Let's do it. Let's do it. And this then leads into a discussion about the whole story arc from those WrestleMania shows with Undertaker, starting with Shawn Michaels, 2009-2010. Vanquishes Shawn. Shawn retires. Triple H picks up the slack. He's going to avenge his friend. And then they do the match at 27. They do the match at 28. And they really got deep into this. But he also talked about his relationship with Triple H over the years. Going back to when Triple H, you know, again, they're not buddy-buddy. They don't call each other on the phone every day. They're not texting each other. But there's a mutual respect there that was earned from very early on when Triple H, maybe about a year or so into when he came into the company. You know, Undertaker tells the story. He sees him one day, calls him over, and gives him a shot at Jack Daniels. Triple H downs the shot. Even though Triple H don't drink, Undertaker knew that. But that was sort of his way of... You know, you're cool with me. You're one of us now. And after that, the two of them were fine. They got along well. He says Undertaker was the person, Triple H says, that he went to when he was in a relationship with Stephanie and he was worried. He was worried about what other people were going to say. He was worried about what other people might think. And he went to Undertaker. And Undertaker was the one who gave him some sound advice and said, look, don't worry about it. Don't worry about what other people think. I could just picture Undertaker talking to Triple H. The heart wants what the heart wants. They had footage, rare footage of Undertaker as a groomsman in Triple H's wedding party. I had never seen that before. So he talks about how dearly he holds those four WrestleMania matches. The two with Shawn, the two with Triple H. And I got to show some love. They had some clips in here, but I have to show some love because I don't think it gets enough. I know everybody loves to talk about the later years, the WrestleMania matches, but I don't think that WrestleMania 17 match gets nearly the love that it should. It's not the greatest match of all time or anything like that, but I always thought that was a great match. I thought it was a very good match that is overshadowed, even though it's on arguably the greatest WrestleMania card top to bottom of all time. I feel like it doesn't really get the attention that it deserves. It's overshadowed by these other matches. So I wanted to give it a shout out here because I like that match. And you know, for all the talk about some of the false finishes and like the later matches, the Hell in a Cell match, there's a great false finish in the match at WrestleMania X7 where Undertaker gets him up for the last ride. Triple H has a sledgehammer in his hand, bashes him in the head with the sledgehammer. Undertaker falls down, slow crawl over. That was a great near fall too. So I want to show that some love. But not every match between the two of them is going to be a winner. We could talk about X7. We could talk about 27, 28. They had a championship match at the King of the Ring. They didn't bring this up. They had a match at the King of the Ring in 2002 that was god-awful. It was a terrible, terrible match for the championship at the King of the Ring in 2002. So that's proof right there that no matter what kind of great chemistry they may have, not every match is going to be a winner. That was a terrible match. Their match in Australia was not really much better. And, you know, for me, therein lies the problem, or one of the problems I had with this. You guys tell me if you agree. Undertaker makes it a point in these episodes, and this episode is no different. Makes it a point to talk about how storytelling is very important to him. You know, I wanted to tell a good story, like his WrestleMania matches and everything. Oh, that great story arc. It told a great story. We hear him say this over and over and over again. And he's right. He's right. He's not wrong. It did. It did tell a great story. Now the Shawn Michaels thing, Heaven and Hell, the rematch, Shawn Michaels, I've got to beat you. I'll put my career on the line. I've got to beat you. Triple H then, you know, kind of stepping in to avenge his friend and try to do what his friend couldn't do. Like, it was a great story between these guys who all have history going back to the Attitude Era and even beyond or you know, behind the Attitude Era, going back into the mid-90s. You know, the New Generation Era and all that. A lot of history there. So he's not wrong about that, but for someone who values that so much, for someone who values telling a good story, letting the story play out, having that great payoff at the end. Okay, for somebody who clearly values that so much, the fact that all it took was one phone call, a random phone call one day from Vince McMahon, hey Mark, you know, would you like to face Triple H again? We're doing the show in Australia. I want to book you two in the main event. You guys will go one-on-one. When their last match was supposed to be the end of an era, right? The fact that he could be so easily swayed, even though that was the perfect kind of fitting final chapter to that story, I wish they would have left well enough alone. I don't want to sit here and sort of wonder what his intentions are. Is it really about money? Look, I'm sure the money is great. I'm sure the money is part of it. I'm not going to say it's all about the money because you watch this series and clearly this is a guy who cares about his craft and cares about his legacy and is very, you know, cognizant of the fact that he's getting older and he wants to go out on a high note. All of that is very important to The Undertaker, but the fact that he was so easily like, oh, sure, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do it. Maybe it's all about just having fun. Maybe he's like, hey, that sounds like fun. I get to work with an old friend of mine. I'm sure the payday doesn't hurt. But I wish they would have just left well enough alone. As a fan, you know, when you have a story as great as the one that they told, and then you watch them here on this show, you know, the one in Australia, and they went out and they had a lackluster match that went, I think, almost 30 minutes or over 30 minutes, longer than it should have. You watch the video highlights here in this episode, and you would think it was some great big epic battle. You would think it's the greatest match of all time. All due respect to Edge and Randy Orton, who I know have already, apparently they're time travelers. They've already gone back. They've had the greatest wrestling match of all time. We just haven't seen it yet. You can tell what I think of that tagline. But you watch the video highlights of this and you would think that it was the most epic match ever, but it didn't come anywhere close to that. And look, I wasn't as harsh on the match. If you go back and watch my Super Showdown review or listen to it, I wasn't as harsh on the match, I think, as a lot of other people were. You know, my attitude was it was not a good match. It was a disappointing match, but the effort was there. Both guys, you know, they gave everything they could. They tried, right? The effort was there. They weren't there just to collect a paycheck and do a couple of moves. They tried. They tried, and it just couldn't live up to what they had done previously. And really, let's be honest, I mean, the match, it served one purpose. There was one purpose to this match, which was to set up the tag team match that was coming about a month or month and a half later in Saudi Arabia. Shawn Michaels was out there in Triple H's corner. Kane was out there in the Undertaker's corner. The whole purpose of this was to set the match up in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel. And, you know, to that end, it accomplished what it set out to do. I guess if that was their goal, mission accomplished. The people in the stadium seemed to enjoy it, but this was one of those matches. You know, look, if this aired on a WCW pay-per-view back in the mid-90s or the late-90s, and I know there was a war going on at the time, but honestly, WWE, Triple H in radio interviews, I don't know about The Undertaker, used to take pot shots all the time at the old guys in WCW. Look, there was a period of time where Triple H was even talking smack about Ric Flair, his idol, who he has taken good care of in his time here in WWE. But even he was like, you know, these guys are like, they're like old fossils. They're like dinosaur. And they would mock WCW, age in a cage. It's the seniors parade. We've got, you know, this youth movement in WWE. Attitude, younger stars, cooler stars. And I just think, I don't know, I think back to that and I look at that match in Australia and I just say to myself, or even the one in Saudi, God, you know, here we are 20 years later. You know, it's amazing how time changes, how things change, because this is the kind of match that would have been mocked mercilessly by WWE and some of these same people when the shoe was on the other foot. And as a fan, it's just, you know, sad to kind of sit back and watch that. But I guess if you live long enough and you wrestle long enough, you kind of become that person. You become that person. They talk about the relationship between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Undertaker says he didn't like Shawn outside the ring very much at first. When he came back in 2002, he was a changed man. You know, Shawn Michaels has said in interviews, the first person he went to when he came back in 2002 full-time was The Undertaker. And he wanted to apologize for the way he had conducted himself previously. And Undertaker's attitude was, we'll see. He didn't buy into the fact that this guy was completely changed. He's like, we'll see. You know, we'll let your actions speak. And he was shocked. He says Shawn was a totally different person. And so they talked about their relationship and they talk about that first WrestleMania match of WrestleMania 25. Now, here are two guys that went out there in the first ever Hell in a Cell match. My math is off. But it was over 10. Over 10 years before they had their first WrestleMania match, these two guys went out there in the first Hell in a Cell and had what is easily one of the greatest matches in the history of the company. I would still say to this day, the greatest of all the Hell in a Cell matches that have ever been done is that first one. You know, the one with Mankind is more of a, you know, more of a spectacle. But between the match itself, the Kane debut, who turned into this incredibly, you know, I mean, talking about a durable character who's had longevity in the company. I mean, it wasn't like Kane debuted and 6 months later he was gone. That was a history-making night for that company. And they went out there and they killed it. They killed it. They found out that night that one of their colleagues had passed away. That couldn't have been an easy night to go out there and perform. And they went out there and they killed it. And here they are, 12 years later, they go out there at WrestleMania 25 and they have what, again, in my opinion, is the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, was that WrestleMania 25 match. Triple H said that he was in the back watching it. He still had to go on later on with Randy Orton. to wrestle for the WWF Championship or the WWE title, and he's just watching this going, we're fucked. He went over to Orton and said, we are fucked. When the match was over, he went to go find these two in the trainer's room. He threw the belt down. Maybe he was laughing when he did it, or maybe he was really pissed. He threw the belt down and said, you know, what have you done to me? How can I go out there and top what you guys just did? And the answer is he couldn't. Nobody could. He was in an impossible position. I love everything about that match. You can say, well, you know, it is finisher spam. There is, but the story, the work, some of the near falls, I love everything about it. I love everything about that match. That was a match that ever since Shawn came back in 02, I was waiting for. I got really excited when they were in the Royal Rumble in 07 and again in 08. And we got some interaction between them, but that was it. We didn't really have, like, their paths didn't cross. So when they had that first WrestleMania match, I was ready for it, and they didn't disappoint. It's the match that got Bret Hart to, you know, this renewed interest in, you know what, maybe I can come back to WWE and kind of work with them again. It almost reignited his passion for wrestling, he has said before. Because he was watching just like everybody else was that night. So I can't say enough good things about that match. You know, when I think of the greatest WrestleMania matches ever, I think of a few things. And I have a list of, like, you know, my 5 or 10, you know, which I've talked about before. There's a lot of great WrestleMania matches, memorable WrestleMania matches. Hogan Rock, Shawn, Kurt Angle. I mean, I can go down the list. But when I think of the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, Hogan Andre and the Slam is the most iconic. Still to this day, there is no WrestleMania match, in my opinion, more iconic than Hogan Andre. Might not have been a good match. For that time, the match was fine, and it built to the big slam, which, you know, I mean, as a fan, it kind of still gives you goosebumps to go back and watch, and you see the sea of people in the background going crazy. You know, that show has taken on a legend of its own. But I think of two matches, really. When I think of the, you know, kind of A number one and number two, greatest Mania matches ever, it's this one at WrestleMania 25, and it's Bret Hart and Steve Austin. You know, WrestleMania 13. With the double turn at the end. Those, to me, they're right at the top there. So then they talk about the WrestleMania 26 match. I love the build to that match, too. I'm more fond of 25. I think 25 was the better match of the two. But they're both excellent matches. I do give the nod to the WrestleMania 26 build-up. The video package, Placebo, running up that hill. I love all that. I love it. But Shawn got his closure. Shawn Michaels knew at least a year in advance he wanted to wrestle at WrestleMania 26 and call it quits. It's like he called his shot. I want to retire at this show. Let's do this. Let's tell this story again with The Undertaker. And I'm done. And I'm at peace with it. And you know what? He was. Even though he came back for the Saudi match almost, you know, 10 years later, he stayed retired. He stayed true to his word. He felt like he was at peace. He didn't have to come back. Think of all the opportunities he had to come back. There was a period where he could have come back and had a match with Daniel Bryan many years ago at WrestleMania. All the matches he passed on because he just felt, no, like, I'm done. I had the perfect send-off. I got to wrestle one of my favorite opponents in the main event of WrestleMania. I got, like, the best send-off you could ask for. And he was content with that. And it almost sounds like Undertaker was sort of jealous. Like, you know, I hope to one day have the same clarity, he said, that Shawn had coming out of that match at WrestleMania 26. Because it's still something the Undertaker hasn't been able to find. We did learn something interesting that I wasn't aware of during this episode, which is according to Triple H, it was the Undertaker who came up with the idea or wanted to work with him at WrestleMania 27 to continue the story. Again, you're the guy coming in where you're going to stick up for your friend. You're going to try to avenge Shawn Michaels, who was forced to retire because The Undertaker beat him. He couldn't beat The Undertaker. So now you're going to try to do what Shawn Michaels couldn't do. So it was Undertaker who really pushed for the idea. And you know, that might be one of the explanations why that match with Sting never happened when he was, again, available and supposedly somebody from WWE did call to talk to him and it never really went anywhere. It sounds to me like whether the conversations would have gone somewhere or not, you know, Triple H wouldn't have wanted it because then he would have been without a WrestleMania match. Triple H was going to fight for his WrestleMania match. But it sounds like Undertaker wouldn't have gone for it either. He wanted to tell this story. He wasn't interested in diverting from that and doing something else. They had a plan, and, you know, they wanted to stick to the plan. This is what Undertaker wanted. So I wasn't aware of that going into it. The Hell in a Cell match in Miami, WrestleMania 28. That was the first WrestleMania that I ever attended live. And they had a Hell in a Cell match on that show. Mohawk, Undertaker, taking on Triple H that night. One of the greatest near fall sequences in any WrestleMania match in the history of WrestleMania. The super kick from Shawn Michaels, who was the referee, super kick into the pedigree. I thought it was over. I bought into it. I thought the streak was over. And when he kicked out, the place went nuts. Because guess what? I wasn't the only one in the stadium who felt that way. So another very good match. Not my favorite match between all of them, but it was a very good match. And I love that near fall spot. And then, of course, the pose on the ramp after where they're on stage. And they turn around and Triple H is being held up by Shawn and Undertaker's got him, you know, on the other shoulder. And they just sort of peer out into the crowd. And it really was like it was one of those moments where you watch that and it's like, shit, I'm watching part of my wrestling youth, you know, I wasn't that young, but like part of my wrestling childhood in a way. And it kind of felt like, boy, if this really is the end, what a great moment. After all these WrestleMania matches and all the moments they've had together over the years, what a great moment if this really is the end. Then they hugged. Then they had to screw it all up and come back again, but anyway, they interviewed Kane for this, and Kane talked about the relationship that he's had with The Undertaker over the years, how helpful Mark was to him early in his run as Kane at a time when in that locker room back then there was a lot of, you know, backbiting and politics and guys who were only looking out for their own spot, only interested in, you know, is this good for me and not is it good for kind of the roster of the product as a whole. He said their first match in Boston, WrestleMania 14, is his all-time favorite. He thinks that's just the all-time greatest match that I guess they've had together. And maybe that Kane has had in his entire run. That match meant a lot to him. To wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania was a big deal to him. And one of the coolest parts of this episode was around this part where Kane is talking. They had footage of, I don't know if it was 98 or 99. It was during the Attitude Era. Somebody was walking around with a camera in the locker room, like in the hallway. Very narrow hallway. All these guys, Kurgan, there's Bradshaw, the Acolytes getting his, you know, gear on. And there's Kane. Kane is talking to Kurgan of the Oddities. Kane's talking to Kurgan, but he's got his mask off. So he's got the Kane outfit on, the Kane 98 outfit. And what was very strange about this is the mask is in his hand. You can't really tell if there's a wig attached to the mask. You know, they had a wig attached when he unmasked many years later. My understanding is it wasn't a case where he wore a mask for all those, a mask with a wig for all those years. But yet his hair is blonde, basically blonde. I don't remember Kane having blonde hair. So maybe he did wear a mask with a wig attached to it. That would be news to me. I didn't think he wore a wig all those years, but back then it was one of those things like, I don't want to say the holy grail for wrestling fans, but like you knew who Kane was, right? It was Glenn Jacobs. It was the guy who used to be Isaac Yankem. Like we knew that, but there was always a hunt. You got to look for pictures with Kane unmasked. Somebody's got to find a picture of Kane unmasked. And maybe somebody did. I never did, but you would go online and, you know, you'd kind of search around for it. And you would never find it. And then there he is just kind of walking around the back, no mask on. You know, got some of the makeup under the eyes, and it's like, man, I would have killed to see find a picture of that back in 98. The other cool part of this, and this was my favorite part of the entire episode. So they're getting ready to do the match at Crown Jewel. 2018, Saudi Arabia. It's going to be DX against the Brothers of Destruction. And Undertaker and Kane are in the bowels of the building, getting ready to film a promo. And you can hear the producer in the background. All right, ready, Kane? I'm going to count you down. He counts him down. And Kane says, you know, DX or whatever, Degeneration X. You've said you've got three words for us. Well, we've got three words for you. And they pan over to the Undertaker. And the Undertaker says, go fuck yourselves. And everybody just cracks up laughing. Kane does the crotch chop and goes, you know, walking off. I was like, man, they should have used that, man. They should have used that shot. How great would that have been? Undertaker going around telling everybody to go fuck themselves. Then choke slamming him and tombstone. He could just do that for the rest of his career. You know, just walk up to guys. I mean, he went through that phase where he was kicking people in the dick. This could be the go fuck yourself phase of the Undertaker. I thought that was great. Undertaker was shocked when Shawn Michaels agreed to come back. He didn't think he would do it. For years, Shawn was adamant, I am retired. I am not coming back. It's like, stop asking me. And I guess Undertaker must have gone to him and made the pitch. And he was shocked. He didn't think Shawn would say yes. You know, Shawn's mindset, because they interview him as well, is, well, you know, I'm going to get to do a match with some of my friends. And he had always said that. He had always said, look, I don't want to come back full time, but like to do something fun, if I was working with Hunter or I was working with some of my friends, he had kind of expressed that he might be open to that. So it wasn't like a total shock that he would come back. And so the match was made. And Triple H said, yeah, the idea was very simple. It's like a night off, right? We've all worked together before. We're four pros. We'll go in there. We'll do some of our signature spots. We'll do chokeslam, pedigree. Easy night, right? Easy night at the office. And of course, turns into a complete disaster. Triple H said, you know, I got hurt. Says, what do you say? Me and Taker at that point were only wrestling like very limited dates. So like our bodies were, you know, kind of failing us at that point. Shawn had been retired. He had just come out of retirement. Kane was the mayor. He goes, it was like a comedy show. It was like a comedy act. And then they show highlights of the match. And in the first, like, 5 minutes, Triple H tears his pec. He does the Harley Race bump out over the top. I guess his arm hooked the rope, tore his pec. And he says to Shawn, I tore it. And he goes, the look on Shawn's face was like, are you kidding me? I just came back. This match just started. I'm going to have to work this whole match now pretty much by myself. There was another spot where Shawn was on the top rope with Kane. He was punching him. And he punched him so hard, Kane's mask and wig went flying off his head. Kane had to cover up and go get his mask. Shawn did the moonsault off the top. Undertaker and Kane didn't catch him, which is ridiculous. I remember being upset about that. How do you not catch him? You got two guys standing there. You got these two giants standing there. This guy's doing a moonsault off the top. And they just let him splat on the floor. The whole match was a complete disaster. Shawn Michaels looked the best out of all of them. You know, he hadn't wrestled in so many years, and Shawn, I mean, I can never get used to Shawn Michaels being bald. It just felt wrong. Bald Shawn Michaels should not be wrestling. But he looked the best out of all of them, which isn't really saying much, but Undertaker took responsibility for it. He said, my mind wasn't in the match. He goes, I was having, you know, family issues. Me and Michelle were having issues with other members of the family at that time. He goes, It just wasn't there. And, you know, his wife says it's this vicious cycle. He's got to redeem himself. He had this bad match. Now he's going to go back and he's got to redeem himself all over again. Batista, he said, look, this guy's going to keep doing it until the wheels fall off. Until somebody says to him, you have to stop. Batista said he's just going to keep doing it over and over and over again. You know, Shawn Michaels, Jim Ross, Vince McMahon, they're all saying the same thing here at the end of the episode, that when you get to that point in your career, it's tough to let go. It's tough to know when is the right time to just say that this is it. You know, it's time to let go. And so that's how the episode ends. I feel like they all end the same way. Undertaker not understanding. He's not realizing when it is time to let go and when it is time to call it quits. It's kind of, honestly, I love the series so far. I think it's great. It is kind of sad to kind of watch him like this, not being able to figure out when enough is enough, never getting that satisfaction. Is he ever going to have that satisfaction? it's kind of sad. Now, the next episode, Chapter 4, which is kind of disappointing, this doesn't drop until June 14th. So we're not getting a new episode until the day of the Backlash pay-per-view, and which is 2 weeks from now, 2.5 weeks from now. I'm wondering if it's possible part of the reason for that, I mean, they could just be milking it, but they may not be finished filming the series. Undertaker was on with Ariel Helwani. He's been making the media rounds, this guy. And he did an interview with Ariel Helwani that was very good, where he, and this was maybe 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, he said that they weren't done filming for episode 5. So it's entirely possible they're just not done filming up to the very last episode. And maybe they just need a little more time. I don't know why we have to wait so long, but yes, June 14th is the next episode. It is going to cover the disastrous Goldberg match in Saudi Arabia, which fell off the rails because Goldberg had busted himself open. He got concussed. He was all bleeding during the match. And plus, you know, they'll tell you the heat from wrestling outside in Saudi Arabia. I don't know what the temperature was. All those things put together created this horrible situation. And of course, Goldberg went for the jackhammer and dropped Undertaker on his head. And the preview for the next episode has Michelle talking about how she was immediately texting their doctor to see, is he okay? Because he didn't look okay. The one thing I will always remember and never forget from the end of that match is they had to go home. Undertaker could tell, like, we gotta end this. And he gave Goldberg this horrible chokeslam. Goldberg didn't really go up for it. It looked terrible. And he pinned him. And the Undertaker just, they immediately play his music, and he sits up, and he's looking, I guess, at the camera. I don't know if he was looking at his wife. Outside, he looked, I've never seen him look so disgusted with a match in my life. That's the best word I can use to describe it. He looked disgusted. He looked furious when that match was over. And so, obviously, he wasn't going to let that be the last match that he had. In fact, if I remember, I think it was the next month. At Battleground, or whatever that pay-per-view may have been, I think is when he did the tag team match. It was him and, I think him and Roman, against Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon. And he looked very good in that match. Tag team match is probably not a bad place for him to be in. Doesn't have to work the whole match. Gets the hot tag, comes in, runs wild, does a few big moves. Yeah, what were they? The Graveyard Dogs. They had t-shirts made up, the Graveyard Dogs, because they were a tag team one time. We've never had a documentary series like this before, focusing on one of the truly top stars in the company like this. And the last person in the world that I would ever think would have been so open and just sort of putting himself out there like this is The Undertaker. So, again, I'm enjoying this. I think it's an excellent series. But it truly does feel to me like the end is finally near. I mean, I know it's in the name of the series. It's called The Last Ride. But it truly does. It finally feels to me like this is going to be the end. And it's either a case of him announcing in that last episode that he's done and he's content to kind of ride off after that Boneyard match, or we're building to a send-off, you know, Survivor Series send-off in November, 30 years to the very event where he made his debut. If he was going to have one more match, that would be the place to do it. And then the only question is, who does he work with? I don't need to see him in there again with Triple H or with Kane. I know some people would think Kane would be an appropriate final opponent. I don't think we need to see that match. I like the name Aleister Black just because he's a guy on the rise. Another kind of dark, demonic character. I think some of the build and the promo work could, you know, potentially be good. If I was going to put him with somebody current, you know, younger and current on the current roster, Black would be the guy that I would go to. You got the rest of the year to keep building Aleister Black up to, you know, make it feel like he really should be in a match like that. But I don't know. I don't know if that's what we're building to, or if, again, the announcement is just going to be, I'm done. I had this great match with AJ. We got very lucky because of the circumstances. I'm content. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's how it all ends. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. I will say this, though. If he does come back and has one more match at Survivor Series, right, 30 years after he made his debut, I would love to see him come out in some version of his original gear. I want Grey Glove, the cloak or whatever, and Grey Glove Undertaker. We got to get Grey Glove Undertaker back if he's going to wrestle one more time. I know we're not going to see it, but I would love to see him go back to that old outfit. One final time, no disrespect to Purple Glove Undertaker, who was pretty badass. We got to get Grey Glove Undertaker back one more time. Subscribe, hit that thumbs up. Join me for my AEW Dynamite live streams each and every Wednesday night here on the channel at 10 p.m. There'll be a brand new Sound Off episode this Sunday, as there is every Sunday, so I hope you'll join me for that. And I guess, I guess back here again in, 2 weeks? 3 weeks. I think it's 3 weeks. June 16th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Right back here on the channel for the next recap, Chapter 4 of The Last Ride. Take care, guys.